Greetings, fellow United Nations Centers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, today the topic I want to focus on to start the show is how the bailout has been gamed by big corporations and investors. You probably have heard or read a little bit about the tip of the iceberg. And that tip would be how the CARES Act, which is passed in March, and the CARES Act, just to recap, provided for three levels of loans to business plus an income supplement to households. The income supplement to households were the $1,200 checks per person, and the additional unemployment, supplemental federal unemployment benefits of $600 on top of whatever the state paid. And the state paid, different states pay different amounts, but no state pays more than a third of what you would have lost in income. So, if like in California, the top would be $450 a week and $600. So until the end of July, there was a supplement to that, and that would maybe bring your lost income somewhere around two-thirds or three-quarters of what you ordinarily would have made. Not the full amount, but, something less, but closer than one-third. Okay, so it was the unemployment benefits, and then those unemployment benefits were extended to people that never got it before, at any amount before, like gig workers, contract workers, so forth. That was called the PEUC extension. Okay, so, the CARES Act was that $500 billion of that, checks and unemployment. And then there were three programs of loans to businesses, one to small businesses, less than 500 employees. That was called the PPP program, Payroll Protection Program, $500 billion. Initially it was $350 billion. It got gobbled up, a lot of it by bigger businesses that shouldn't have gotten it. We'll talk about that soon. It got gobbled up, and they had to pass another $310 emergency dollars addition to that. So it was, that was $660 billion. That was the low end for the small businesses. Then the middle end for medium-sized businesses up to 15,000 workers, 500 to 15,000. That's pretty small middle, isn't it? That was called the Main Street program, Main Street. And that was $600 billion, right? And then there was for big corporations, like the Boeings and the airlines and the defense firms and so forth. That was another $500 billion. So that was the CARES Act, you see. $500 billion for the top, $600 billion for the middle, and $660 billion for small businesses, PPP, as it was called, plus the unemployment and the checks. That was the, quote, stimulus. Okay. That amounts to about $1.7 trillion. On top of that, the hardly discussed at all in the CARES Act was another $650 billion of tax cuts for businesses and corporations. Those $650 billion. Only 3% of that would go to people, households earning less than $100,000 a year. So it was, it was all businesses, investors and businesses and high-end and so forth. Another $650 billion, so that brought the whole thing, $3 trillion or something like that. And then there was some additional money here and there, for hospitals and so forth, and testing, et cetera. So about $2.7 trillion, okay? $2.7 trillion. Now, on top of that, the bailout included another $3.3 trillion, roughly, in the Federal Reserve, the central bank, providing free money to banks and financial institutions through what it called 11 special facilities, lending facilities, you know, like buying junk bonds and buying exchange-traded funds and et cetera, repos, so forth. Now, that was in addition. That goes to the financial system. The $1.7 trillion in the three loans goes to non-financial businesses, and then the $500 billion goes to workers, you know, 130 million households. And you see how it's really like a 10-to-1 ratio, you know, 10 bucks to businesses and bankers and $1 for workers. Okay. Now, as we know, to get back to the topic of gaming, how this was gamed, big corporations, as we know, and it hit the press, hit the media, were gaming the system with their friends in the banks. In other words, all that $1.7 trillion also goes through the banking system. $1.7 trillion. The Federal Reserve provides that money to the banking system. And the banks then lend out to non-bank businesses. Well, the small business agencies in there, you know, working with the banks as well. Right? So you got to remember, it all goes through the banks. Central bank, the Fed, and except for the $500 billion direct in unemployment benefits, all the money goes through the banks. The banks are the big bottleneck. I'm talking about the big banks here mostly, you know, the Wells, the Morgans, and so forth. And that's the way the system is set up, you know. Everything's got to go through the banks. And, of course, the banks get their 5 to 10% fees and who knows what else deals off the top. And, you know, the banks got the... since they are in the driver's seat here, maneuvered and negotiated with the Treasury and Fed administration here to get other freebies for themselves, like no liability, right? They got liability protection here. And they were supposed to hold, under the CARES Act, 15% of these loans instead of selling them back to the Fed. Because that's what it's all about. The banks issue the loans, they get their fees off the top, and then they're, of course, holding those loans, but then they sell those to the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve pays them. And the Federal Reserve gets its money from the Treasury, which got its money from Congress appropriating the money. Okay. So that's how it works. It all goes through, virtually all of it goes through the bottleneck of the big banks that skim everything off the top. Well, you know, that alone is gaming the system. It's legal, but it's gaming the system. The banks are get everything they want, right? And as I said, you know, instead of holding initially 15% of those loans, the banks negotiated with the government so they only have to hold 5% of those loans on their balance sheets. In other words, they got no risk at all, essentially. You know, it's free skimming off the top. You know, if we had a public bank, we wouldn't have to do that, or we wouldn't even have to do that if the Treasury wanted to just expand the small business agency and just provide the money directly through the small business agency. Or, you know, if there aren't enough SBA offices around, you know, just expand it further. Do it through the credit unions or even do it through the post office. You know, you could expand and hire people and expand those institutions to distribute the loans to those who needed it. You don't have to do it through the banks. Well, but that's the way it's set up. It's a capitalist system. It's a financial capitalist system. And those guys at the top get to skim everything off the top for themselves. So that in itself is a form of gaming of the system, I would say. But, you know, there's more obvious ways that it's being gamed. As I said, you probably heard of how the banks work with their big customers, the client customers, and funneled the money to them first. You know, whether it was the PPP money, well, as we'll see, it's virtually all the PPP money, $660 billion. The banks funneled it to their best customers, and they funneled it to companies that had more than 500 employees. In other words, they shouldn't have been eligible. You know, and that created that stink, the initial $350 billion that was supposed to be loaned out here to small businesses, didn't get the small businesses, you see. A lot of it was stolen by larger companies. Well, how did they do that? How did they game that? Well, you know, a lot of these companies are structured so that their various branches and offices and franchises were small, you know. And this was a good example of some of these finance companies, you know, private equity firms and so forth that had, you know, small operations, you know, technically independent, but not really, or like the franchises for the fast food companies, right? I mean, it's still McDonald's, but they, you know, did it individually. And, well, McDonald's was forced to give the money back, I think. That was so obvious and blatant, gaming. So, you know, that gaming was well known. That was publicized. And some of them have had or voluntarily gave the money back so they wouldn't have to put up with legal charges. But that went on. And, you know, a lot of that initial $350 billion had to be supplemented by another $310 billion that was quickly passed after that. Now, you know, we've got millions and millions of small businesses in this country. Millions. Depending on how you define small business, whether it's a unincorporated, independent contractor or not, or just incorporated. If you define it narrowly, you know, there's about 9 million businesses in this country, about 20% are corporations, and the rest are proprietorships and partnerships. Well, the last evidence I've seen is that only 4.3 million, in other words, only half, actually got anything under the PPP program. Most very small businesses don't know how to go about it and didn't go about it. And so, you know, you got a lot of them that just went under and now will go under, did not get any of that PPP at all. We'll talk about what that means for, quote, stimulus. All right, so that was the most egregious and visible way of gaming the system. But there are others as well. Let me give you some examples, right? Boeing, let's talk about the $500 billion for large corporations. You know, Boeing was supposed to get some $50 billion of it. Defense companies were going to get about $17 billion. The airlines and suppliers were going to get 40-some billion. And, you know, the rest was open for big corporations to apply and get some of these loans. But they're not taking the loans. No, they haven't claimed it. Even Boeing hasn't claimed it. I mentioned this last week, you know. Boeing was allocated like $50 billion, $53 billion, something like that. They didn't take it. Why? Because if they took it, they would have to apply most of it to maintain wages of furloughed workers. They didn't want to do that. What they did instead was not borrow the money from the government. They borrowed the money by raising corporate bonds because interest rates were so dirt cheap, they could issue their bonds and get cash that way. Plus, as I've said many times on the show, big corporations were fat and are fat with cash for various reasons. One, they drew down their credit lines, their short-term credit lines from banks to the tune of hundreds of billions. They issued corporate bonds in general. Over $1 trillion in corporate bonds have been issued in 3 months. That's as much as all of last year. In other words, by June, corporations had issued, that's just investment-grade bonds. I'm not even talking about junk bonds. Investment-grade bonds issued more bonds this year than they did by June 1st than they did all of last year in 2019. It's a bond boom. It's a bond boom. And they've raised a lot of money. You know, they issue these bonds and investors buy the bonds from them and they get cash from the investors, and they add that to their cash hoard, you know, which includes hundreds of billions in drawn down loan credit lines from banks, plus the corporate bonds, plus suspending dividend payouts. And how much did they pay out in dividend last year? Oh, what, $600-700 billion in dividends alone? Another $600 billion in stock buybacks? And I'm just talking about the Fortune 500. Yeah, $1.3 trillion in buybacks and dividend payouts. Well, they just suspended that. So they're saving that money. Hundreds of billions are there. Hundreds of billions from credit line drawdowns. $1 trillion in bonds. Saving their a lot of costs in a lot of ways. You know, people aren't working, they're furloughed. You know, they don't have other expenses. Yeah, they may not have revenue coming in, but they don't have other expenses. So they're saving money there. You know, plus they got the $650 billion in tax cuts, which they haven't claimed yet mostly, but they will before the end of the year. Okay? So what you got is the big corporations just bloated with cash, and therefore they don't and have not been borrowing, whether they're from the government under that loan, $500 billion for large corporations. They haven't been borrowing it. They don't need it. They don't want to add even more debt at terms which aren't as attractive as borrowing from the capital markets by issuing corporate bonds. So Boeing refused and instead laid off 16,000 workers instead of providing for maintaining their jobs. They laid them off, right? I think they laid them off because they want to move their business, more of it, to South Carolina. And the better way of doing it is scare the hell out of the people who still have jobs there in Seattle. Okay, you know, play ball with us or we're going to move more of your jobs. They're going to move them eventually anyway. Another example is United Airlines sitting on a $10 billion cash hoard, right? They've been able to draw down a couple billion in their credit lines. They don't have fuel costs. They've parked their planes, so there's cost savings there. They're not giving dividends out, so cost savings there, right? They've raised $1 billion by issuing more stocks. That's another way, by the way, they can raise more cash. Just issue more stocks. You know, I mean, the most ridiculous version is Hertz. Hertz Rent-A-Car, right? Hertz Rent-A-Car filed for bankruptcy and started a bankruptcy process, defaulted on their debts, and were able to sell even more stock and raise money. You're in bankruptcy and people are buying your stock. Figure that out. Well, because bankruptcy is Chapter 11, and Chapter 11 is not really bankruptcy. It's just reorganizing the company so the company can bilk some of its debtors and not pay them all, and its employees, and get rid of its pension plan, by the way. Okay, so it's really a game. Chapter 11 bankruptcy is a corporate game. But United Airlines sitting on $10 billion in cash as well. And they don't have to borrow until October 1st, sometime before October 1st, if they want to borrow more, okay? So this is going on with all the big corporations, you know? That $500 billion, last I saw a couple of weeks ago, only $50 billion was claimed of that $500 billion at the top end. Well, what about the middle end? You know, the $600 billion at the middle end. What's going on there? Well, here's another example of how the system's gamed. Okay, I'll go slow. The Federal Reserve has what's called its Main Street Facility Program, and that includes, among other things, providing loans under the $1.7 trillion, $600 billion of it, to middle-sized corporations, you know, middle-sized, up to 15,000 workers. That's pretty big middle. But anyway, providing loans. You know what? Not $1 of that's been loaned out yet. The Fed announced it in March, and only next week, or maybe already a little bit this week, is it beginning to issue loans under the $600 billion medium-sized corporations Main Street program. So just consider this, right? $1.7 trillion under the CARES Act for loans for businesses, $660 billion for small business, $600 billion for medium-sized under the Main Street program, and $500 billion for large corporations. As I said, only $50 billion in large corporations has been loaned out, and nothing of the $600 billion for medium-sized. So there's $1.1 trillion on the books that hasn't been loaned out. Gee, they couldn't be that bad off, could they? They don't need the damn money. They're flush with cash in all other ways. Now, here's where the gaming comes in on that $600 billion. Okay. The Fed announces the program, the Main Street program, in March. It only now starts buying the bonds back from companies as part of that program. You know, the Fed's supposed to purchase $750 billion in corporate bonds as part of that program. That's a lot of corporate bonds. And as I said, there was a bond boom with corporations issuing all these bonds since February, early March, over a trillion. Okay, they issue the bonds, investors buy the bonds from them, and then the Fed buys back those bonds from the investors. But because it waits 3.5 months, it's now going to buy back the bonds from the investors at a higher bond price. In other words, the Fed purposely waited 3 months before it starts buying back these bonds. And in the interim, we have a bond boom and bond prices go up. And all the investors that bought those $1 trillion of corporate bonds are now going to sell them to the Federal Reserve under this program at a higher price. They're going to make a killing. They're going to make a killing. Hundreds of billions, trillions of dollars, investors, professional investors, are going to make off of this because the Fed purposely waited 3.5 months before it starts buying it. Now, that's a big game of the system. Investors, which could be institutions, corporations, equity firms, hedge funds, whatever, right? They're the professional investors, are making a killing off of this. You know, I've been saying for quite some time, the whole purpose of the Federal Reserve is to bail out the system. But now, in the last several decades, it's got a new mission. And that mission is to subsidize the financial system. Not just to bail them out, but to throw more and more money at them so that the profits and the cash flow is even greater than it's ever been. That's what's going on. It's going on the tax side, too. As I've said many times, tax cuts, tax cuts, tax cuts for corporations, businesses, and wealthy investors ever since 2001, especially. This has been going on. $15 trillion in tax cuts for businesses and corporations and investors since 2001. 2018, it was another $4.5 trillion in the 2018 tax cut over 10 years. Okay, so it's $300-400 billion a year. And then in 2019, another $429 billion in loopholes passed. And then now we have a $650 billion addition to that as part of the CARES Act. Tax cuts, tax cuts, tax cuts. Free money, free money, free money. Fill those corporate coffers. Fill them up, fill them up. That's what's going on. Fiscal monetary policy is just a conduit of shoveling more and more money to investors and corporations. You wonder why we got income inequality? Well, that's it. You know, it's not simply that wage incomes are stagnating, are being held down. It's because the top end's being boosted by these fiscal and monetary policies. And the CARES Act, you know, is the latest big contributor to that. $650 billion in tax cuts to be taken later this year. $500 billion, well, it hasn't been taken up yet. $600 billion, well, that's going to be taken up. You know, Fed's going to buy $750 billion of bonds from investors at higher prices. Okay. So that's a big scam. That's a big scam going on. And you don't even have to break any laws for that. That's the way it's set up. Okay, so we got the obvious, to recap up to now, the obvious larger business stealing, the PPP small business loans, right? And we got Fed's Main Street program subsidizing bond investors, right? No inspectors. No inspectors telling people, well, who got what? Who got what? You know, if you remember, in the CARES Act, there's supposed to be a board, an overview board, but Trump has nixed that. And the inspector general, who's supposed to oversee how this and report on how this money is being distributed, is a fig leaf, doesn't exist. No one's looking at what's happening. You know, who's getting what, right? And, you know, some concerns are being raised because this went on in 2008-09. Big business scammed the system, especially the Fed, and they're doing it again. You know, some progressive Democrats like Sherrod Brown and others in Ohio as a senator saying, hey, we got to look at this. We got to look at this, right? And show us the details. Well, you know what? Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary, says, you know, go pound sand. I ain't showing you nothing. I ain't telling you who got what. And they won't. And you get, and you know what, on the Fed side, the Fed doesn't either. The Fed makes reports to Congress, but does not talk about who got what. In other words, what companies and investors gamed it and stole money. You'll never find out in those reports. Okay. So, you know, there's no inspector general to oversee this stuff. And the small business agency also refuses to give details. So both the Fed, the small business agency, and Mnuchin, the Treasury, none of them want to tell us who gamed the system. And by that, I mean individual companies and investors gamed the system. We know the gaming is going on. We see the big aggregate numbers of what's happening, but we don't know. Hmm? The other thing, another thing going on is they're passing rules and regulations now that make it easier for PPP, small businesses, right, to convert their loans to a grant, to cash, immediately. Immediately. I mean, they haven't even gone months, 3 months to pay it off. And now they've rewritten the rules so they can simply file a one-pager, I think, and they decide, small business, the businesses decide, okay, you know, this is a grant. It's not a, it's not a loan, right? So all of that $1.7 trillion is just free money with no inspectors going into the hands of shareholders and corporations and the shareholders, right? And even small businesses. Another game is the big banks, who will skim at least 5 to 10% off the top of all these loans of either of the three tiers when they make the loans. You know, they're funneling it to their best clients. They have no liability here. You know, that's been pretty much eliminated for them. And as I said, they don't have to hold 5% of this. They can sell 15%. They only have to hold 5% of these loans. And they'll sell the other 95% back to the government. Okay. Now, in the HEROES bill, which is being debated right now, we got more of the same going on. Except very clearly, the Senate, is going to eliminate the unemployment extension. You know, the $600 a week, excuse me, supplement to unemployment insurance, that ends at the end of July. And probably, I don't know for sure, but the unemployment benefits for independent contractors and gig workers who previously never got it, now, that probably ended too. And there will be no additional checks, $1,200 checks. Now, the Democrats in the House have made proposals to extend this unemployment and these checks, but it's pretty clear, you know, McConnell and the Senate will not allow that anymore, right? I also didn't mention here the $650 billion tax cut, how that's being gamed legally. Well, by the end of the year, what you're going to see is businesses now can use the CARES Act and that tax cut provision in the CARES Act to reach back 2 years and get refunds for the taxes they paid. Yeah, they can retroactive their losses this year back 2 years and say, okay, we're going to spread it back there and therefore give us the money back we paid you in taxes, government. And they can do it going forward 5 years as well. All right. So they'll be gaming the tax system for years to come here as if they needed it, you know. you know, that's part of the freebie system for them as well. Those are all examples, you know, on how the thing is gamed here. But the new gaming coming up is the following in the Heroes Bill. The new gaming has to do with converting the unemployment benefits, which they're going to discontinue, and turning it into direct wage subsidies for businesses. In other words, the government will pay the wages of the workers of companies instead of giving the unemployed workers continued unemployment benefits. In other words, send them, discontinue the unemployment, make them go back to work, make sure the companies take them back to work, even though the business may not be there, and will pay their wages for how long, I'm not sure. But up to 85% of the wages will be paid to the company. Now, you don't think the company's not going to game that system? You know, maybe they were going to bring people back and pay their wages anyway, but now they're going to say, oh, we weren't going to bring them back. Okay, we'll bring them back. You pay me the wages. And this has long-term implications. I mean, this could be, you know, the camel nose under the tent here for eliminating unemployment insurance system and converting it into a wage system. A wage subsidy system for businesses. And they'll pay 85%. And, you know, they're doing this over in Europe, too. So they're certainly going to do it here. You know, if the French are doing it, they're going to do it here. Right? Wage subsidies. You know, the taxpayer pays the wages of companies. Right? Who would have paid it anyway? And the money that they would have paid in wages, they're going to spend on something else, be it dividend payouts or stock buybacks or giving their senior managers extra raises and so forth. Or they're just going to hoard it. Well, that's how, you know, the gaming continues. These are all examples, and, you know, we'll continue talking about some of these examples as more and more of them sort of appear here, that up to now it's beginning to look, you know, pretty much as a comprehensive gaming system going on here. Okay, I want to talk about some other topics here as well today, and you know, maybe one very clearly is the second wave, the COVID-19 second wave, which is beginning to appear. I just wrote an article here. It's posted on blogs, and it's on my blog, jackrasmus.com, called The Second COVID Wave in the U.S. Economy. Take a look at it. Go to my blog, jackrasmus.com, or go to Counterpunch or ZNet or wherever and read it there. Well, it looks like there's a second wave here. Some say, oh, it's an extension of the first wave, and it's south and southwest regions of the country, including the West, including California and Oregon and other places, seem to be having a resurgence here, not just in infections, but in the testing positivity rate. That's the key indicator here. You know, you could argue, we've got more infections because we're testing more. But if you look at the testing positivity rate, if that goes up, it has nothing to do with whether you're testing more or not. It's a better indicator of second wave coming. Well, we got states like Arizona where, you know, they're almost maxing out their ICU units. And, you know, we've got 2,500 new hospitalization cases in Texas and more than 2,000 in Florida every day going on. Other states being whacked, you know, I think it's Alabama and South Carolina, and throughout the South and the Southwest, but also the West. Well, you could argue that the South and Southwest is really just a extension of the first wave. But clearly, those states that in the West that had dampened the infections, and now they're surging again, you know, that's the second wave. And why we got a second wave? Well, because we're opening up the economy, right? Open up the economy. In the southern states, it's been open for over a month, you know, in most cases like Texas. They've been open since May 1st. Well, no wonder they got a surge. You know, so opening up the economy, and then to some extent, unknown probably is the demonstrations going on, Black Lives Matter and so forth. You know, a lot of people congregating together, not everyone wearing masks. And we have this cultural problem of people who just don't believe, particularly in the South, that this thing is contagious. And they're not wearing masks at all. They're not social distancing at all. And then you've got Trump having his rallies now, starting today, in fact, I believe. No, tomorrow, Tulsa, right? And the people on the beach, you know, nothing's changed. It looks like, you know, a lot of younger people think they're immortal. And by the way, on that, the myth that it's only the older people who, you know, get the serious version of this and die. Not true. Arizona, where we got a big surge going on now, and most of their beds are, ICU beds are full. You know, a Pew Research showed that 84% were people under 55. Yeah. And the fastest growing segment of infections and hospitalizations is people 20 to 44. So it's a bit of a myth, you know, that this only affects older people. But, you know, that's what's propagated by the right-wing blogosphere and Trump, you know, who is a mimics that blogosphere, pushes the same idea. So we got this general opening up, and there will be a second wave. It may have already begun, you know. The second wave is going to impact the economy as well. As I've been arguing in my articles, you know, this thing, you know, the economy and the problems of the economy is not being driven solely by the virus. The virus precipitated it deeper, drove it deeper, and accelerated the economic problems. But those problems were emerging and maturing before the crisis with the virus. Right? So there's two sets of drivers here. One set is virus-driven, but another set is more fundamental going on. And, of course, the two interact with each other. The two sets of forces driving the economy to contraction are interacting with each other, exacerbating each other. So if you exacerbate the second wave, it's going to exacerbate the economy problems as well. You know, and the economy problem is that, look, the stimulus is not a stimulus. It's not stimulating very much. Think about the numbers. $1.7 trillion in loans and unemployment and so forth. Okay, the unemployment and the checks have been spent. There's no more stimulus there from that. Estimates I've seen is that working families have lost over $1 trillion net here in the last 4 months. That's net. That's out of consumption. That's out of the economy. Unemployment insurance puts a floor under that, and checks were supposed to put an even addition to that floor, another level to that floor, but only for 8 to 10 weeks. It was only a mitigation, not a stimulus, you see. And that mitigation is over. So forget about that $500 billion. Well, what about the PPP, you know? Well, what, about $530 billion of the $660 billion has been distributed already. That's not a future stimulus, you know? And that was kind of like unemployment insurance for small businesses, right? To mitigate their losses, to put a floor under a deeper contraction of their losses, both workers and small business, put a floor, not to keep it where it was because, you know, the mitigation was not equal to what was lost by small businesses or by workers. You know, it would have been a lot worse. But it didn't bring it back to parity here at all. Net, we still have a contraction going on despite the CARES Act. And that's only the PPP and the unemployment and checks. As I said, $1.1 trillion of additional loans haven't even been taken up by medium and large businesses. Haven't even been taken up. So, you know, if that was $2.7 trillion CARES Act, you know, subtract immediately $1.1 trillion from that. And subtract the $650 billion on the tax cuts, because that won't be claimed till the end of the year. That's not going to hit the economy now. Okay, so what do you got? You got $650 billion total and $500 billion total. So you got about $1 trillion of stimulus, which is really mitigation. It's not stimulus. It's mitigation. In other words, to slow down the collapse, but the collapse keeps coming. That's all the stimulus we've had. That's nothing. You know, this contraction was four times worse than 2008-09, and the fiscal stimulus back then was 5% of GDP. And you know what? Today is four times worse in 2020, but it's still only 5% of GDP. There's no stimulus to speak of going on. And the Senate says, oh, we want to wait to see what effect. Bullshit. That's not why they're waiting. You know, they're looking for some statistics that they can manipulate to say, oh, we don't need to give workers more unemployment benefits. We don't need to give more checks here. All we need to do is change unemployment into wage subsidies. That's all we got to do. Austerity is here already. Yeah. They threw some crumbs out there to us in $500 billion in small business, and now they're saying no more crumbs. You know? Why? Well, because big businesses and investors are doing well. They're fat cats. Even in the airlines, you would think the airlines were really bad. Well, they're sitting on United Airlines, $10 billion in cash. They're not hurting. But boy, we're sure throwing the money at them, aren't we? Well, that's why, you know, McConnell and the others don't want to do another stimulus in the HEROES Act. They don't want to do that. I mean, their constituency, big business investors, are okay. All they want to do is force workers back to work by ending their unemployment benefits and use that as an excuse to give wage subsidies to their business buddies. That's what it's all about. It's such a scam. The whole thing is a scam. The whole bailout is a scam. You know, we can talk about individual expressions of that scam, but it's a scam. Nothing's being bailed out. There's no real stimulus going on. And that's why the economy is going to keep contracting. Yeah, we're going to see a little bit of a bump up here. You know, I mean, after all, they're forcing people back to work. So you're going to see some. And after all, you know, they did provide $1.1 trillion for small business and for workers here. And, you know, that's going to end up in some stimulus, a little or buying of the economy. You're going to see a little bit. It's not going to continue contracting at 20%. It's going to be a W-shaped recovery. We're going to see a little recovery here over the summer. But then in no way are they going to gain back what they've lost. In no way. Look, in economic theory, you can cut business costs all you want. You can give them very low interest rates, free money. You can cut their taxes. Right? You can subsidize their wages. But it's not going to get them to expand production and investment, which is what growth is. You see, you've got to somehow expand where you were to grow to have a stimulus. not a mitigation, a stimulus. And businesses do not invest. And I'm not talking about just, you know, expanding production, but maintaining production, which is investment. They're not going to invest unless they see profitability, rates of return. And how are you going to get a rates of return when you've had so many people unemployed and few are going to get called back? Expectations drive business investment. Rates of return drive business investment, not the cost of capital, you know, not the cost of financing capital, interest rates. That's small change compared to sales and revenue and profitability. And there is none of that. That's why businesses are hoarding cash. They know it and they're sitting on it. And by the way, you know, part of that $1.1 trillion to workers and small businesses is being hoarded too. Look, the statistics show that the savings rate has ballooned. In other words, that's the portion of your income that you don't spend for both businesses and households. The deposit rate, in other words, money people are putting in their accounts in the banks and businesses too, has ballooned. They've taken the PPP and the $500 billion. Yeah, they've spent some of it. Those who are really hurting spent it. But those who aren't really hurting it are just putting it in the bank. They're saving it. They're depositing it. Look, where business likes to put its short-term cash is in money market funds. Money market funds were $3.6 trillion in February, $3.5 trillion rather. Today, as end of May, they're $4.6 trillion. Somebody put $1 trillion into money market funds. Yeah, in 3 months. They're stashing the cash. Well, how many of you and I have money market funds? How many businesses? Lots, all. Short-term cash, that's where it goes. $1 trillion. And the bank deposit rates are up, and the savings rates, household savings rates are up. The money's being hoarded. And you can't blame folks. They don't know what the future is going to be, and it doesn't look that bright. They're uncertain about the future, so they're not plowing money in to the economy. Yeah, there's some of it. Look, retail sales last week, big news, up 17.7% over April. Well, what they're not saying is it fell 14.7% in April and another who knows what in March, even more. In February, yeah, make it look like it's a big deal. Well, you know, it's amazing that it was only 17%. Increase in retail sales. That's what's amazing, given the fact that they pumped $1 trillion into small businesses and households. And retail sales only barely recovered the month before. People are hoarding their money. Except those, you know, who are really desperate, who are living paycheck to paycheck, didn't have $400 for emergencies, working in service jobs, part-time, whatever, service jobs. Yeah, they're desperately spending it all. But others are hoarding it. No stimulus. In other words, this whole bailout is not a stimulus at all. It was not designed to be a stimulus. It's designed to be mitigation, 8 to 10 weeks, that's over. Right? But even so, it's clearly not stimulating the economy. Clearly. And now they're sitting on their backsides in Congress and saying, oh, well, let's wait and see what happens. Well, I'll tell you what's going to happen. By the end of the summer, it's going to be pretty damn clear when there's no extended unemployment benefits, when there's no checks, right? All of that's gone, spent and gone, not renewed. And all the PPP money has been spent on maybe half of the small businesses. What about the other half? They're going to go out of business. You're going to see a lot of failures, business failures, small business failures. You know? But the big companies are going to be flush with cash. They are now, and they've got $1 trillion there, $1.1 trillion, $600 billion plus another $500 billion. you know, just sitting there that they can take later in the year if they want from the government, if they think they need it, if they run out of their mountain of cash that they've accumulated. Yeah, they got another $1 trillion sitting there awaiting to be claimed. And workers will have, you know, back to the old one-third at best unemployment insurance if you can get it, if you can keep it. Or you can go back to work, forced back to work, and the government will pay the company your wages. You can go back to work, but you know what? Look at those going back to work. Most of them are going back part-time. You know, my look at the BLS statistics shows this big surge in part-time employment. Yeah, businesses are calling people back little by little. They're not going to jump and go back to where they were last December. They're not that dumb. You know, they're going to go very slowly, very cautiously in calling people back to work at the lowest possible wages and hours and to see what happens, you see. And a lot of these service companies have very, very tight margins, you know. And if they're operating at 50% of capacity and revenue, it's going to be 6 months. They're going to go out of business, too. We'll see fairly soon how many businesses went out of business, small businesses, right? And a lot of those that aren't yet will. And that's the picture for the rest of the year. You know, for a working households, make do with what you used to have. No more supplements. You know, and small businesses, that's it. Good luck. Go out of business. But the medium and big boys and the bankers are flush. They're flush. Yeah. And they're not investing. Yeah. They're not stimulating the economy, but they're flush with cash. And that's the scenario. There is no stimulus going on. There is no real stimulus. And the mitigation for households and small business is over. We don't even have mitigation continuation here, let alone stimulus. That's the picture. And they're talking about more tax cuts for businesses. As I said, tax cuts in this situation don't work. Yeah, they take the tax cut and they sit on it. They don't invest. They don't increase production. They don't hire. Why should they? Who knows what the future is going to bring? And now we got this problem of deflation beginning to appear. Deflation, prices beginning to fall. And that's a bad situation, deflation. Because that only increases uncertainty for business whether to invest and expand or not. You know, if prices are falling, do business want to increase output and production when these new products hit the market 3-6 months from now, the prices are going to be less? No. They're simply not going to produce it because they're uncertain about the future. And the same with consumers. If they think prices are falling, are they going to rush out at the first indication of that and buy again? No, they're going to wait until they think prices have fallen as far as they will. So deflation is a bad situation. Defaults are a bad situation. The more defaults you have, the more business also freezes up in terms of new investment. Well, gee, if all these businesses are, you know, in my industry are going out of business, you know, things must be really bad in future. I better hold tight. And the same thing with business default, household defaults. You know, people see their neighbors foreclosing on their houses or cars being repossessed, right? Are they going to go out and buy a house, even if the prices are less? No. Defaults, deflation create a psychology, both for consumers and for businesses, where they hold tight. They hoard some more. And then it gets harder and harder to stimulate the economy. What are some of the industries most affected so far? Well, you know, a report came out, McKinsey Consultants here. The industries obviously most affected from the first wave of this great recession of 2020 are hotel and food services, arts, entertainment, right? Recreation, education services. Other services and wholesale trade, they're the ones getting whacked the most right now, travel, etc. But right behind it are what's called high risk, financial risk of default, deflation, bankruptcies. Right behind that could be a second wave here, and that's construction, manufacturing, retail, and utilities. This is McKinsey Consultants, you know, big business research company doing this research. So we're not out of the woods by any means. And the second COVID wave could put even more pressure on this entire scenario here. It's very clear, though, they're not going to shut down again. They're desperately afraid of doing that, Trump and all of the capitalists. They're not going to shut down anymore. They'll let grandma and grandpa die. Yeah? Nothing's going to shut down. And then we have this cultural thing in this country where so many people, I would say particularly in the South and other places, just don't give a damn, you know, about social distancing and wearing masks and so forth. They don't give a damn. They don't. It's not only that they don't think they're going to get ill. If they get ill, they don't give a damn whether they give it to somebody else. And, of course, you're most contagious right before you come down with symptoms. Yeah, we got a cultural problem in this country of people not really caring about each other anymore. It's a, you know, it's the generation that grew up under greed is good, Ronald Reagan in the 80s. You know, they come of age now, and they're the dominant group here. Except now we got the millennials and the Gen Zers coming, which are totally different. They're the ones being whacked big time by the last crisis and by this one as well. And they're radicalizing. These are the people out there supporting the Black Lives Matter. You know, there's a bigger meaning to these demonstrations. It's not just racial inequality and racial brutality by police. Yeah. By the way, let me just make a comment on police. You know, I wrote a piece confronting institutional racism, which is on my blog as well. Take a look at that, jackrasmus.com, a couple weeks ago. But what I've been watching and concerned about is police reaction to all this. There's going to be a police strike in this country. It's already beginning to emerge, right? Sick outs, work to rule, early retirements, refusing to respond or responding slowly, you know, letting looters do their thing and so forth. There's a police reaction going on. A lot of these police, you know, when they take off the uniform, they join these right-wing groups and so forth. We got a problem with militarization of the police. You know, we had enough talk about that. I don't mean just the equipment being given to them by the military. I mean militarized procedures and processes and protocols. An attitude, a cultural attitude. You know, when you militarize your police, if you're in the military, the enemy, you know, is the other and therefore needs to be eliminated, right? But when you have a military attitude in the police, demonstrators and the populace are the other. And we got these military attitudes. I mean, just look when the police captains come on TV. You know, they got their four stars, right? You got a whole military hierarchy there, military attitude, and a military culture in the police force. They think they're arms and military. That really has to be changed somehow. Okay, watch out for the police strikes. You know, they're coming. They're emerging already. Okay? Okay, I think we're pretty close to the end of the day here. We'll end up on that note, and we'll watch this COVID wave, second wave here in the economy, what's happening globally. We haven't really talked about much lately. We will. Watch these numbers. Watch these numbers. Housing is really down. Housing starts by 500,000. Auto industry is in trouble. Hotel industry, only 40% of the rooms are being taken up. We're going to see some defaults here before the end of the year, and that brings us to the question of what will be the impact on the financial system, and that's another topic altogether. Okay, that's it.